All the day's business stories, weekdays from 6 p.m.
And so we continue our discussion on financial matters as it relates specifically to the youth, given that this is Youth Month and we're celebrating the youth today in particular. In studio with me is Matthias Potgieter. He's a debt expert from DebtSafe. John Manike, he's the head of financial education at Old Mutual. And Esther Usch, she's a product specialist at FNB. And we're going to take a listen to a clip now. Of course, as I mentioned before, we took to the streets of Johannesburg to hear questions and thoughts around financial and security matters from the youth.
Hi, I'm Paul, 27 years old, and I am quite uncertain about taxation laws in South Africa and when filing and how filing needs to happen. So any advice on tax filing would be very useful.
All right, so I know you guys are not really mandated to speak around the issue of tax, but the young man has asked the question. Any general kind of advice that you can provide?
Yeah, I think Paul is in the right track because it shows that he's a very responsible South African because he's not the kind that wants to evade tax. You know, consult your nearest tax branch and they'll gladly assist you. And, you know, but definitely I think kudos to him.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Matthias?
I think it's a good thing, but make sure that you get proper advice and you understand as well, because I think most people are sometimes scared of tax because they don't understand.
Yes.
They're scared of filing tax because they don't know how to do it. And there's services, as you mentioned. Just go to your nearest SARS office and they will be able to assist you with that.
All right, super. Okay, so now let's listen to a young person who's asking issues around investment, perhaps.
Hi, my name is Keletso and I'm from Tembisa. I go to UJ. I'd like to know how to invest my money since I get so little allowance.
All right. Investment is a very big deal indeed. And we do hear from people of your ilk that it's important to invest for retirement. But what about just investing, you know, so that you can build up a nest egg for things like holidays and so on? Perhaps I can start with you, Esther, your thoughts on the young lady's question from Tembisa.
First of all, well done for going to UJ. That's my ex-university. So very glad for that. Listen, hats off to you being as young as you are thinking that you want to invest. But investing and saving is two different concepts. So let's unpack those concepts. So saving is very much a short-term thing. That's going to be money that you're going to use in the next 2 years. And you don't want any volatility in that. So you're just going to literally use cash products for that. Longer term than that, that's proper wealth creation. What you're going to do then is you're going to start looking at things like unit trusts and those type of things. Short term, if I was a student, I was in that position, I would build up a little bit of an emergency fund first. So sort of 3 months worth of expenses that you can get hold of reasonably easily because emergencies happen. Mm. And listen, an emergency is not a handbag. Okay, so let's just put that out there as well. So short term, don't worry too much about the retirement at this stage. You've got 2 or 3 years before you can start thinking about that. Start your emergency fund. Start looking at what your financial goals are and then start investing and saving according to that.
Mm-hmm. John?
A couple of things. Firstly, I want to say whenever you invest, make sure you have a goal, you have a purpose. Because the challenge with people who save without a purpose in mind, they struggle with, disciplined savings. Because then, you know, something happens and you start using the money for something else. Unless if the money was ring-fenced for an emergency. So it's very important to have that. Secondly, you know, if you have a goal, you need to make sure that you have an intimate relationship with this goal. Because whenever you are challenged, I mean, there's all sorts of things. It is that intimacy that you have with that goal that will have. For example, you might say, I'm saving because maybe I came from a disadvantaged background and we never had a house.
Yes.
And I'm saving for a house. You know, you see, that's a goal and it will drive you because you have an intimate relationship with the goal. But then, of course, you know, when you're talking investing, one of the most important character there is patience. Because the problem with some people who want to save is that they expect high returns the next day. That's why people are so vulnerable to these get-rich-quick schemes and so on. So patience is very important. In fact, you must be patient because if you're not patient, you'll become a patient.
Matthias, around this very issue, Esther touched on it, talking about, you know, there's still a few more years before you need to worry about retirement. we often hear from, you know, people in the financial industry that it's good to start saving for retirement as early as possible. So what is the special number? When should you start saving for retirement, assuming that you're in employment and you have an income?
As soon as you have your first paycheck, that is basically when you start. And even if you start small, even if it's a, if it's 100 Rand or 200 Rand or 500 Rand, whatever you can afford, but it is about, and I like what you say about that intimacy and that discipline, it is really about just getting your hands and your feet into it and start doing it, but really very much from your first paycheck. The other side is, and that is where I just have to be the devil's advocate now again, is where people say that, we all say that we have to save, and we all have to save. And if we have a look at the statistics in South Africa, it's actually quite shocking about how little people are saving. But it doesn't help you sitting with a big debt profile on the one side, especially with unsecured debt, like a credit card, a personal loan, retail accounts, all those kind of stuff. And then on the other hand, sitting with a savings account. Yeah. Because the interest that you're going to get on a savings account and the interest that you are paying on your debt, it's actually going to be better for you to not save in a savings product or a savings account, but rather pay off your short-term debt or your unsecured debt. So that is that sometimes people think that even I have all this debt, but I still need to have a savings account. 100%. That is absolutely stupid. Yeah. But take that money into and put it into your unsecured debt to get out of debt.
So Matthias has hit the nail absolutely on the head. You can't save if you've got short-term debt.
Yes.
What you should try and do is try and build up a little bit of an emergency savings bucket.
100% agree with that.
The debt, so you don't have to go back into a debt cycle to get out of that. But I just want to clarify, I never said leave your retirement saving. The first thing that you do is you make sure that you have a short-term savings bucket. Once you've got that in place, and you know what, could even be a month, you start saving for retirement. You start saving for your kids' education and let that grow. Because literally, as you say, $100 now doesn't seem like a lot. I mean, it's not even a good night out if you think about it. That in over 40 years, taking into account the compound effect, as John alluded to, can make a significant impact as to whether you can retire comfortably or you're going to be dependent on someone else. Then I just want to say one more thing, and that's also touching to John's point. There is no royal road to success, when it comes to investing. If it sounds too good to be true, it absolutely is. Okay. So if someone comes to you with a scheme that sounds too good to be true, you tell them to disappear.
Okay, let's look at a reader question. When it comes to saving and building wealth for retirement, is it essential to initially buy property? I live in Cape Town and earn 17,500 gross income per month, which is not enough to buy property, or is it? I always feel panicked when I hear people say you should invest in property. I'm doing my best to invest in an RA. Please advise.
You want to go first?
No, you can go first. I'll fill in.
So again, there's the distinction between having your own property. So a property is an asset class. It's a way of creating wealth. You have a property, and you need to have a property that you're actually staying in, a roof over your head. And I think we pretty much have the opinion, rather pay your own bond than paying someone else's bond. So, you know, it sounds like it's not a lot that you're earning at this moment, according to you, but you could potentially get quite a nice little apartment, even in Cape Town, for that amount of money.
Then once really?
Well, not center Cape Town, maybe a little bit further out. But definitely start paying your own bond, and then once you've got that in place, you can start looking at sort of your retirement savings and all of that. But it's something that you should be doing together. I don't know, John, how you...
Yeah, I don't think you can beat that. So you're certainly spot on. So I think when it comes to property, it's also about, if you decide that you want to buy property, you need to buy in the area that you can afford.
Yes.
Because, you know, whilst we're saying it's the right thing to actually buy property, but it doesn't mean you must go and lift a bond for 10,000 Rand when you actually own 12,000 Rand. So you need to be a bit modest. I mean, you'll never see a leopard carrying a giraffe on top of a tree.
Matthias?
I always say to people when it comes to property is that it's quite a long-term investment as well. It is not something that you get immediate gratification. Only after year three that you've been paying your property, you're kind of getting into the swing of it. That first 2 years of paying that bond is hard. It's harsh. And yet again, it's not only just the bond. It is the insurance. It is the maintenance. It is all the other additional things that comes on that we don't sometimes realize that we have to make provision for that in our budget. So renting is there's nothing wrong with renting. In the process of building up a deposit or saving up a deposit to, in the end, buy the property that you want to. So I sometimes get the feeling when I speak to young people that they have this pressure to feel that they need to have a property because that is what should happen. And it shouldn't necessarily be like that. Mm. And investment, and you guys are possibly going to disagree with me, but maybe I'm stupid with investment, so you can teach me something as well, is that the property that you live in is actually really just an expense because you paid on the bond. The second property that you're going to have, that is the investment. Mm-hmm. Because whether I pay my own bond or whether I pay someone else's bond by renting, I still have to live somewhere. But it is better to do it on my own bond for the long term and for the long term vision. Mm-hmm. So don't feel pressure to really buy a property immediately.
I think you are being controversial there, because we know that property appreciates and you can make a whole lot of money if you buy at the right time.
True. No, absolutely. But then again, in the context of somebody who cannot afford to buy their own property for now. So he, for example, spoke about possibly renting. So our research has shown that 4 out of 5 young people between the ages of 18 and 35 actually share accommodation. So I think it's a smart way of doing it, because then if you're going to be renting by yourself, I mean, you're going to pay the full installment, but if you can share accommodation, it will go a long way in ensuring that you've got a bit of...
Are you talking about rental? Are you talking about property?
I'm talking about renting. So let's say you're renting, but you're actually sharing accommodation.
Yes.
So that helps you, because then it doesn't put too much pressure on your disposable income because you're sharing the accommodation.
Esther?
So I just actually want to tag on to what Matthijs said in terms of that budget thing. You know, it's absolutely true what you say, is it's not only the bond that you're paying. And, you know, it's going to be that emergency that's going to happen. It's going to be the geyser that's going to burst. Mm. You've got to make sure that you can afford that. And also, don't maximize. Go and look at your budget. Look at your needs and wants. And don't take the maximum bond that you can afford. And the interest rate that the financial service provider gives to you, say, for instance, they give you an interest rate of 10.5%. Don't work on your affordability at 10.5%. Work on your affordability at 11.5%. Mm. So that if there is a sudden shock in the system, the interest rates start ticking up, you at least protect it for a cycle or two before it starts affecting your bottom line.
Yeah, that's fantastic advice, yeah.
But seriously, it's a terrifying thing buying your first house, but it's a worthwhile in the long run, because as soon as you get over that 3 years and you start paying it off, it is actually starting to become a little bit of an asset in your name. But, you know, I'm also in favor of the renting when you've just moved out of home, and the reason being is you don't quite know what you like there. You know, you don't want to go and buy something that you don't like. So go and get feel of the land, see how you are, and don't rush into anything, I think is a big thing.
Okay. Let's focus a little bit on investment in capital assets. I think we've got a couple of clips on that.
Hi, my name is Rosang Mabocha. I'm 27 years old and from Edenvale. My one question was, what would I ask a financial advisor? And I said, how to invest in the JSE and stocks and stuff like that.
Brian Francis from Johannesburg, 22 years old. Should I take my beginning salary and put it into a high-risk, high-reward situation or into an investment account with a set lower interest rate?
All right. Interesting questions there. I'll just quickly hand them over to you, Esther, your response.
Yeah, okay. So there's a couple of things there. And I think the biggest, there's two things that I'd like to, two very important things and messages I'd like to bring on. The first one is you need to have the appropriate asset class for when you're going to be using the money. What is your goal with that money, to John's point earlier? And then use the most appropriate asset class for that. So if you're saving for a house deposit in 3 years' time, you don't want to have exposure to the stock exchange because of that volatility. In the short term, volatility is a massive threat to your investments. But if, however, you are 22 and you're saving for retirement, you don't want to be in something that's going to underperform inflation. So what you want to do there is you want to have exposure to your growth type assets, your things like shares and property. So that's the one side of it. The next side of it is diversification. Please, whatever you do, when you're investing, don't have single counters. So don't go invest just in shares, just in bonds, just in property, or just into cash. You need to diversify across all of them. So the easiest way to explain diversification is basically a horse race, right? So if you've got a horse race and you've got 5 horses in that horse race, and you bet on one of them, your chances of winning is 1 out of 5, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you bet on all of them, your chances of winning is 5 out of 5. Now, that's intrinsically what diversification is. So in a diversified portfolio, be it through unit trusts or through other schemes, is you get exposure to cash, bonds, properties, and shares. And that's got the benefit of smoothing your returns. And again, you can get unit trusts that are just exposed to cash, unit trusts that are just exposed to property, just shares on, and then you get ones that are a mix of all of those that's appropriate for your time horizon.
Mm. John, just based on what Esther's just advised, what are your thoughts about, you know, the great BEE deals that come out on, you know, JSE listed companies where you have an opportunity as a previously disadvantaged person to invest in a single stock and you may use a lot of your savings to do that. Do you think that's wise? Do you think black people should be taking advantage of those types of things since they're not diversifying, as Esther's suggesting?
Before I answer that question, for the sake of my co-guest here, so what he just said is not financial advice. You need to speak to a financial advisor. He's talking investment principle. Just now somebody comes and say, I took your advice and it backfired.
So everything has got the caveat, get proper financial advice. Yeah,
absolutely. So now that we've got that out of the way.
Thank you. And thank you for picking that up.
Now that we've got that out of the way, let's get to your question.
Okay.
So I think it's a great idea to capitalize on some of these opportunities, these BEE deals. I mean, it's a great way to start, you know, because, I mean, I've seen people, you know, just ramp up wealth through those kind of initiatives. I mean, you get them at, you know, at the bargain, if you like.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a good way to go. But that does not replace the value of financial advice. Speak to your financial advisor.
Okay. Matthias?
What will be interesting for me, actually, and maybe this is more a question than it what is actually a comment, is if we have a look at millennials, and this is basically the youth that we are talking about today, they are living differently. They are doing things differently. They are exposed to different things as well. In your professional opinions, and yet again, it's not advice, is something like cryptocurrency is obviously something that the youth is talking about in a big way at the moment. When I speak to young people, that is the first thing that they ask me, do you have crypto? Are you in crypto? What can I do? Should I do it? And I mean, I'm a fossil, so I don't know anything about it. So I don't know if you guys, because I think the youth is very open to crypto. Yeah.
No, so my only response, and please, I'm not mandated to speak about crypto, but I'm very nervous about investing in something I don't understand.
Mm.
That's so, my thing as
so
well.
So I understand mining. They go underground, they blow stuff up, they bring it to the surface, they sell it. I understand finance. You know, we borrow money or we lend money out and we borrow. You know, I understand all of those concepts. I don't understand crypto.
Yeah, that's my problem as well.
We've got specialists and that can deal with that, but I'd rather make sure that everything's in place first before you start going into that sort of niche type market.
Yeah.
Mr. Fossil John, are you completely averse to cryptocurrency?
Look, I'm waiting for the regulator to make a couple of official statements on how these issues of cryptocurrency, you know, are going to be regulated or dealt with. But globally, for whatever reason, it doesn't sound like there's been a lot of regulators that have come forward very firmly to say this is our stance and this is how this needs to be managed. But I think here, really, the caveat is that if anything sounds too good to be true, then it probably is. Because otherwise, unless they're printing their own money, somebody who's going to promise you this outrageous returns, you need to just think twice, be very cautious.
Okay.